Outkick the coverage live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
We got Brady Quinn, boots on the ground in South Bend. The Notre Dame legend is back home in his old stomping grounds. You got some local establishments you need to go check out, Brady. Is there anything on tap for you as far as taking in the sights and sounds of South Bend, Indiana, or what are we looking at?
Look, not to get on a serious note, but no, I've got a foundation. We work with veterans, and so one of our pillars is we put on educational platforms during the summertime for those who are cycling out of their service. We've got a program here at Notre Dame, so I came up to visit some of the vets. And basically, they come back, they get some intensive coursework and training before they would, you know, go to start, continue, or finish their education. So that's actually what I'm here for right now. So I get to see some of the vets in our program a little bit later on today. But outside of that, man, just spending some time here in God's country, if you will.
That's pretty awesome, bro. Like, that, yeah, thanks, like, commendable work. Like, love the service, been looking at it. Hopefully, you know, it gets a little bit more woven into everything that's going on. But that's a conversation for another time, Jonas.
Yeah, because I know you're obviously, LeVar has a military background as well, too. Your father, correct?
I always loved that, man. And he's a wounded warrior. So, you know, guys maybe underestimate or undervalue or just don't even give time or thought to how difficult that transitional time is and what guys go through, our men and women of service, how they feel, what they experience, you know, trying to really, really kind of adapt and adjust back to regular civilian life. It's a very difficult process. So it's always nice when, you know, there is that giving back and there that attention made, because for the relevance of what they represent in terms of our freedoms and the different things that they go to war for and they fight for and battle for, it doesn't always seem to equate to that value once they come back, you know.
Yeah. 100%. It's weird to me, too, because that, like, my transition out of the sport, too, kind of led me to this path of us. We were doing, and we still have been doing, home remodels. We you know, create entrances that are handicap accessible, et cetera, bathrooms, kitchens, and stuff like that in their house for veterans who have these sorts of needs. But the educational platform came along because, like, I was transitioning out. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, like, man, I've got a background that's been very regimented, been very structured. And even though I'm in maybe a different place financially, I'm still like, all right, what's the next steps? How do you go about figuring that out now? And so I think there's a lot of commonalities between, you know, a lot of those who are in our service, you know, services and serving our country. And then once they get back to civilian life, it's not as easy of a transition, I think, as a lot of people think.
Yeah. And it's so underestimated, man.
And whenever I see pictures on either social media and you guys have done another ramp for somebody's home, and you could say, oh, you know, it's, you know, the smallest thing. But, man, that small thing, that ramp, that being able to get into your home in an easier fashion.
Man, it's
because
a necessity.
And I know, LeVar, you and I have talked about it off the air. Like, I just think it's just amazing work. And, look, at your charity golf tournament, we laugh about all the fun times and the laughing and the goofing around and all that stuff. But what you guys do, the event you put on is fantastic, man. Like,
that's
really
awesome.
Is.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I appreciate awesome. That. It's funny. Like, a vet told me after we did one of his ramps, he started to break down. And I said, hey, man, I was like, you know, we're just appreciative of everything you've done for us and all that. He goes, no, you don't understand. He goes, I've been worried. I've been scared because of how long it'd take me to get out of the house if there was a fire or something. He's like, that was my greatest fear, is just being able to get out fast enough. And he goes, like, and now this kind of alleviates all that for me. And I was like, I didn't even think about that. Like, so many things that you take for granted. So many things.
Just going to the restroom, Brady.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, we take things like that, getting out of bed, stretching, like, taking that morning stroll. Like, you know, I watched my father have to do it in a very different way. You know, it was a wheelchair. You know, he had to make his move with a wheelchair. So a lot of things that I thought were normal in the regular world was not normal.
Yeah.
You know, my dad has a trachea. Like a scar from when they had to go, you know, put the breathing tube and stuff into his neck. And you know, you see so many things. I used to try to put my foot when I was younger. I used to try to put my leg into his prosthetic limb, right? Because I thought something was wrong with me. Like, I used to ask him, like, why don't I have that, Dad?
Or
then I used to put my foot in his, you know, in his leg, and it'd be like, man, like, why doesn't my leg
Your
fit?
Normal wasn't normal.
I wanted my legs to look like his. I wanted to be able to put on a prosthetic limb at one point in time in my, you know, in my life, because I wanted to be just like my dad. So it's kind of crazy, like, just to listen, like, when people are unaware of how difficult it is just to do normal things. And then you see them do extraordinary things. Like, my dad goes, well, maybe not now because the house I bought was pretty dope. But when we were growing up, my dad used to go on the roof and, like, clean gutters and do things. And he had prosthetic limbs, man. Like, the older I got, the more I realized, like, man, like, I understood why we had a one-floor home. Like, I always wanted a two-story home. I'm like, I want to be able to go upstairs.
Yeah.
You know, and you start to realize some of the things that you have to, you know, challenge yourself to get through. And so many people can help and assist. So when you have a charity and you have a work that brings awareness and sheds light on certain things like this that people may not take the time to really think about, yeah, man, I think it's pretty awesome because I lived it, like, my entire life. Like, I don't know anything any differently than that, you know?
Yeah.
I ran a 4 listen to this. I ran a 4.39 40 at 240 pounds at 6'3".
Big deal. Who cares?
And my dad never ran one day in my life with me, and he'll never run a day in my life with me.
4.39, man.
I always said I had my dad's legs. Like, I always said I owe my career to my dad's service, because the things that I was able to do physically, I don't think that it would have been the same had what happened to my dad didn't happen. True story.
Amazing. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. By the way, side note, I couldn't run a 4.39 10. So congratulations to you.
You don't have the calves for it, though, Jonas.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I don't either, actually.
Yeah, not everybody's blessed. Not everybody's blessed
more
with
pop to you. Jonas is that slow twitch.
Calfzilla over there. All right, Brady Quinn, it is Outkick the Coverage here, Fox Sports Radio. LeVar Arrington, Jonas Knox here on FSR. All right, so Nick Saban had some comments yesterday. I thought the location of the comments, he was at the Texas High School Coaches Association convention. And he was talking about quarterback Bryce Young. And apparently Bryce Young is already approaching $1 million in name, image, and likeness endorsements. So here we go. He's never started a game for the Crimson Tide. I actually think he owes Brady Quinn a percentage of this, because you've been talking about Bryce. You saw Brady watched the Alabama spring game and
he played last year too, but
as far as he was now going to be the guy, and you could not wait to point out the fact that that's your Heisman Trophy winner. He's going to be the Heisman Trophy winner, and he hasn't even started the game yet, man, LeVar, and he's at $1 million in endorsements.
Unbelievable. It's a brave new world.
So this brings to light, though, a few things. The first thing I would say to you, and in this whole name, image, and likeness, is as much as these kids are getting paid, he hasn't done anything yet. And so this is really more about the brand and the power of Alabama. And that's one of the things that I think there are some schools right now that their pitch isn't about money to these players, okay? It's about partnering with them to create their brand co-branded with, you know, that university, right? And I think that's more powerful, because that's what Alabama has done with Bryce Young, because they've got the credibility. Like, if you're like, let's say, for example, you know, you're a car dealership and Nick Saban comes to you and says, you should sign a deal with this young man.
There you go.
You know, I've seen quarterbacks that can go get drafted in the first round, a la Mac Jones this past year, Tua Tagovailoa before that, right? Guys who can help us win a national championship. And this guy is better than those two. Mm-hmm. If he says that to you, are you not buying all in right there?
100%.
That's called projection. Projection and solidification, right?
That's the second part. That's usually how these guys get paid anyway. It's not – contracts are usually never not off of what you did. It's what they're projecting you to do.
There you go.
And so and that's what this is more about in this case. But I think it's interesting too, by the way, Nick Saban announced it. not Bryce Young. I think that also tells you about that young man and the fact that I think that's the smarter way to do it. I don't know that if you're any one of these kids, especially if you're on a college campus, you want to put a bigger bullseye on your back, because as much as there's a lot of Bryce Young fans out there, we also know there's going to be some haters. There's going to be guys who are jealous. And so if I was Bryce Young, I'm not advertising how much I'm making. I'll let Nick Saban use that as a recruiting pitch, and if
there
it gets out there,
go.
So be
golly,
it.
Golly, you're hitting on him. You're hitting on him.
But those are the things I see from where this is right now with all this. And look, like I said, he's my Heisman, baby. I'm riding it right now the rest of the way. I'm telling you right now, you better put some money on that young man. Mm.
Everything that I've talked to another guy who works with quarterbacks out here, and I asked him, I was like, hey, so this Bryce Young guy, I heard he's like the guy at modern day as far as like all the – because Leinart was there, Matt Barkley was
Matt
there,
Barkley,
right? And
yeah.
And this guy said the same thing. He said, look, he's not – big.
He's not. He's undersized.
He's all. But you watch him play, and you're like, all right, he's a dude. Like you just watch him play, and he goes,
I'm telling
he's
you, dude,
unbelievable.
This is. You know how we all miss on Russell Wilson. Like, and when you go back and really look at what he did at NC State, especially young in his career, you're like, hold on, now, this dude can sling it. So what's the holdback? Oh, his height. Oh, okay, so a little undersized. And then what, Tom O'Brien had the whole issue with him, whatever. So he goes to Wisconsin. I think they did. They win the Big Ten that year. I know they won the Rose Bowl. So
I'm not sure.
You go.
I don't remember.
They did not. They didn't win that year.
I don't remember.
I want to. Okay.
I have selective memory against Wisconsin.
Okay.
Oh,
by the way, you're on the clock with Wisconsin. We'll get into that later.
Yeah,
on.
We are. We definitely are.
Yeah.
But that's where everyone missed. The whole like even Seattle, they're like, oh, you know, his height, his size. If fortunately for Bryce, they don't have to worry about that anymore. That threshold's already been broken. So I'm telling you, he's going to have a phenomenal career. He really will.
You know, Nick Saban put the entire NCAA major programs on notice by doing
hell
this.
Hell yes.
He put them on notice.
In Texas,
by
the way.
There's no way you can now, because what's going to happen is you're going to have programs and you're going to have coaches that are, you know, narcissistic coaches. And they're going to say, that's not how we're going to run our program. And they're going to dictate, and they are going to leverage however they leverage it. We have a scholarship,
yeah,
and that's still going to be good enough. There
good
are
luck,
coaches
man.
Out there
good
like
luck
that.
With that. Yeah.
Well, by Nick Saban coming out, Nick Saban coming out and doing this,
yeah,
he just gave the green light, saying that the most successful college coach of all time is sitting there basically saying, listen, like, our guy is a guy that's going to make almost $1 million at this point. That is a recruiting tool. That is a change of pace in terms of how this is all going to be approached. And you got to think about this. The amount of money that is being generated and circulated by Alabama's success, it now opens up the conversation of, will recruiting get even more skewed? Will it get even more lopsided because of the success and exposure that a Nick Saban and those people have to these would-be sponsors that can put that money into these kids?
I think a topic we're going to talk about at some point, though, and Jonas, sorry not to jump ahead of you, is that might take care of it, though, when we get there. But one quick recruiting stat on Alabama I thought was fascinating. And LeVar, you've got it. You'll probably hear this and go, really? So Alabama has signed more five-star recruits in the last 5 years, Alabama, than Florida State, Miami, okay, and Florida combined.
No, I live in this world, so no, I'm not surprised
yeah.
at all.
But all three schools combined the last 5 years in their own state?
I am not surprised.
Oh,
I mean, have you
man.
Seen those
it's
how those
factory.
Teams are playing lately, though? Florida
well,
State.
Miami's
Florida State
right.
is Florida State. Florida's been all right. They've been all right, but all of those schools have not. They're shells of their former self. I mean, you're talking about three dominant programs in Florida, and they own their areas, right? Like Miami
yeah.
owned Dade County.
Yeah.
Florida, Gainesville, they own parts of Florida
yeah.
and a few other places. And obviously, you know, you look at Florida State and Tallahassee.
Yeah.
The mystique of Bobby Bowden and all those things, but this it's just not the same. And now schools like Alabama, schools like, you know, Notre Dame can go into these areas and actually extract those kids. So now it's gone back to the original days of when Schnellenberger had to get guys
yep.
to rope off their state and keep their recruits in the area. It's decentralized. And now something like this will even further that even more because, man, like it's I get to go win, play for a national title, and I can possibly get enough endorsement deals while I'm there
to
be around seven figures? Come on, man. That's I mean, you can't lose that way.
It's Outkick the Coverage here, Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington here on FSR. You can hang out with us on the iHeartRadio app. Coming up next, though, somebody in the NFL is having some major regrets. There was a quarterback move recently made, and they are feeling all sorts of bad about why the deal got done when it was done. We'll get into that next here. It's Outkick the Coverage, Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
So Stephen Jones was talking with KXAS TV NBC 5, and he was talking to Pat Doney, and he said named the biggest swing and miss during his tenure in the front office, and he talked about the Dak Prescott contract. He said, quote, probably would have signed Dak the first time around. It would have been better for everybody else involved. So end quote. Credit to Stephen Jones, because you know Jerry Jones isn't going to say something like that. So credit to Stephen Jones, who called it spot on.
We still got to wait and see what that's going to lead to, though. I mean, that's an easy statement to make because you're not throwing anybody else under the bus. You know what I mean? And we have not seen the way Dak is going to perform post, you know, post contract. Like, we could say post injury, but I'm going to stay to post contract. So that's an easy statement to make today. Make that 6 months from now.
Yeah, that's a good point because, you know, look, the risk right now for Stephen Jones is he's admitting the mistake of not signing him earlier, but he's essentially saying that it's put them in a bad position now because they've had to sign him to this monster deal. So regardless of the injury or not, you know, Dak made them pay. He continued to keep pressing to get to free agency, or at least not taking whatever deal was offered to them. And then he was able to get the exact deal that he wanted, even after a horrific injury. So now the risk all really falls on their shoulders because they had to invest into him. They did, and gave him exactly what he wants, but he might not be the same player. You know, you don't know how he's going to come back.
Just don't know.
So
yeah, you don't.
There's a huge risk there, but I do think it's interesting that, like, it wouldn't be better for all parties involved because, I mean, Dak still made a lot of money.
He
got the contract he wanted, so he's probably the only one that it benefits more so than everyone else.
What part of the contract didn't he beat them on? Like, he got the years, he got the money, he got the guaranteed money. Like, all of it. I think he got a no-trade clause as well, too, to where he can veto. I think that was part
you
of the
gotta,
other.
You
he
gotta
got
be
everything.
Surprised. That he didn't, I mean, let's be clear here. I know that Jerry loves Ezekiel Elliott, but as of today, you're not looking at that as possibly your biggest miss on a large, ginormous contract?
I was just going to say that. Like, the fact that they got the Zeke Elliott contract done and Amari Cooper done before Dak Prescott.
Ezekiel Elliott has done nothing since getting his contract. Like he's been. I mean, you're even questioning. I mean, for me, when I look at it, I you know question, can he ever return to the form that he was when he created that reputation and was one of the top backs, if not the top back in the league? We haven't seen it.
And that was a couple of years ago.
It's been a little while.
2018 led the league in rush. I mean, look, it was tough last year without Dak, and as bad as their defense was. I don't know that he had as many opportunities to kind of run in meaningful moments. And then obviously once Dak was out, then it was everyone's loading the box because that's all they really had to stop. What was Zeke? So, and plus we also kind of fail to acknowledge the offensive line hasn't been quite as good since 2018 either. Like that group has taken a little bit of a step back. There's been some injuries there too and some turnovers. So it is a piece of everything that I think has played a role in all of it. But the only other thing I'd say is, Jonas, I disagree. I do think Jerry Jones would say. I do think Jerry Jones would say something, like make a flippant remark or just say something on the air and admit to a mistake like this. You know, I think it's actually more surprising Steven would only because Steven seems to be pretty measured with his approach and the things that he does, you know, that he lets get out there publicly. Jerry might call in during the week and say God knows what about his team or any decisions he's made or his personal life on some of the talk radio
and enjoy
from Texas.
It. And enjoy yeah. doing it. Like no yeah. no apologies necessary. Like enjoy doing it.
Why do you think they didn't get it done? When the contract was first being discussed, was it this all about Dak and him hiring a new agent and then just, you know, basically saying line in the sand, we're not budging past this. If you want to meet us, you got to cross this line. Or was this Dallas just assuming the debt? Because all of this, and this contract, this monster deal gets done. I think it was more than a lot of people expected it to be. After his leg almost fell off a year ago, like he won every aspect of the deal. So what are we talking about? They could have saved what, $10-12 million just a year, just on the annual salary, had they got this done initially. And I've heard from a lot of people say, look, had they given him a little bit more on their initial offer, they could have had this done a couple years ago. And we were talking about Zeke and Cabo and them getting that deal done. They were having discussions with Dak about potentially getting a deal done, and they didn't. So I don't know, man. I think this was a major whiff on them. I don't know if it was as big as the Zeke whiff, but I think this was a major whiff by Dallas.
You got to establish what you believe the win is by giving the contract. First and foremost, the first win is that Dak is an established leader on this team. He's also a respected figure in the Dallas football, you know, faithful community. So that's a win. How are you going to replace Dak? How are you going to replace his production if you let him go? That's a win. How are you going to handle moving forward if Dak goes somewhere else and he plays very well? So when you think about some of the wins initially that they're able to get just based off of the sentimental value and just the off-field value, the humanistic value of Dak Prescott, I think you can already measure that. But now if you're taking it into consideration, the on-field aspect of it, that's going to be the biggest question mark here, because even though we look at Dak as one of the best winners since he's become the starter of the team, this is still a franchise that prides itself on selling its fan base on winning championships, and they haven't done that in a very, very long time. So if you're basing it off of that, I think that now puts a ton of pressure on this Dallas franchise to have to win, and have to win now based upon how much they paid Dak.
I mean,
I definitely think that's a part of it. I don't think they missed, though, on Zeke. I think they were in a position where, I mean, what was their alternative?
I mean, they Pollard signed him to this. Has played well.
He's played well, but as a feature back, like I don't know that he was going to be as impactful as Zeke is.
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with you, but I mean, he has been more productive than Zeke has been. That's all. I mean, just factual.
In what capacity? What do you mean?
Well, just in terms of yards per carry, the yards in the game. I mean,
look, that hasn't been true over the career of both being there.
Not the career, but the last couple years.
And the only thing is with yards per attempt, because this is a little tricky. Because as soon as the guy becomes the bell cow back and he gets more carries, what happens?
Well,
that comes
attention.
Down, right?
Right.
If you want to base yards per carry on who's the best rusher on the team, more often than not, it's the quarterback then. Because his yards per carry are going to be usually around 4.5, 5 or so, maybe even higher than that, because he's taking off on passing plays, picking up a first down, and he's not going to run that much, right? And obviously those sacks don't come off his rushing stats. So, like, that's the hard thing about yards per carry is that, like, the more Tony Pollard plays, I don't think he's going to be quite as good as Zeke. Like, a lot of the defensive coordinators that I'll talk to will say, hey, man, this guy – he's the guy we always have to worry about. Like, he's the guy we don't want to get running. We'll let Dak try to beat us with his arm, but they're still trying to stop Zeke from running the football. And so that's the only reason why I always feel like if that's what defensive coordinators are telling you or defensive players are telling you, then it still tells you that there's a little bit of doubt in what Dak's ability is as a passer, even though I think he's gotten better every single year in this league, and he's continued to prove all the doubters wrong. So I don't know at this point how people could still doubt his ability as a passer in this league.
Well, first, he comes out late. You know, the later round you go, the less respect or the harder it is to get a – a next bigger contract.
Well, how would you guys know, Mr. First Round Draft Picks over here?
I've studied this before. I wouldn't know personally, but I've studied it.
I saw the rest of you on day two and three.
Yeah. But you know, another interesting point to add to the conversation as it applies to Dak or even Ezekiel Elliott. If Ezekiel Elliott or Dak Prescott, if they continue to have great seasons beyond going to that threshold of what their contract is and they start getting that franchise tag slapped on them, like what happened with Dak Prescott, if they continue to play well, then the price tag goes up. You're actually paying Dak a market value contract in terms of if you consider them to be a franchise quarterback that you're going to have for a little bit of time. So same with it exists with Ezekiel Elliott. If you just let Ezekiel Elliott continue to be the leading rusher or tops in that category, and you don't, and you're giving him, you know, franchise tags, that franchise tag starts to pay you more than what you would make if you did get that mega contract. And so now the economics of it start to get a little bit like lopsided. And if you're going to pay the guy and you want him to be on your team, then at some point you're going to have to bite the bullet and you're going to have to pay something that's close to market value that isn't, you know, going to cost you with your franchise tags.
You know what's funny about the Dak Prescott contract, when you got Stephen Jones coming out saying, well, you know, it was our biggest regret. It was a swing and miss moment for the front office. Like, who actually thought? Because I remember LeVar, like Brady and I were talking about this, and I remember hearing you guys discuss it on First Things, or not First Things First, but on Speak for Yourself. Mm-hmm. And this is a big topic of conversation, because let's be honest here. The Dak Prescott contract discussion got us through a majority of the pandemic. So we can all, like, I mean, listen, we can complain all we want, but it seemed like there was some sort of comment from Jerry Jones. Like I'm telling you, that and Tiger King got us through a real chunk of the pandemic. So I was appreciative of Dak Prescott.
Brady, do you think that this could have been a prompted question from Stephen Jones? Like, to me, there is so much malign of Dak Prescott, right? Jonas, like Brady, like, this is something that for the longest time, why do you keep franchise tagging him? Why will you not give him this contract? Why will you not award him the contract? Is this a prompted question to be able to go public and kind of, you know, make sure everybody's okay with the fact that Dallas is okay with Dak Prescott and they support Dak? Because that seems more of a – this seems like more of an agenda-driven question that he would go straight to Dak Prescott in that contract.
No, it's an interesting way of portraying it. Yeah, you could maybe make that case. The reality is most organizations, when they draft the quarterback who they sign to a second contract – is not going to be a quarterback that's drafted in the fourth round. You know, Russell Wilson drafted in the third round.
Yeah.
The hard part about him is that team was so good so early, and then he was so good that they caught lightning in a bottle. And so a year into it, they're like, yeah, he's a franchise guy. Like, they had no questions about it. Dak had a great rookie year, but it wasn't like he wasn't doing some of the stuff that Russell was. And then in Russell's second year, they go win a Super Bowl. So by that point, there was like, okay, he's drafted in the third round. We know he's going to come up sooner, but we still got to get this deal done to extend him. With Dak, the team hasn't had as much success. He's a fourth round pick, even though he continually improved every year. It wasn't like you caught that same lightning in the bottle. So if he had another year, I think they get that deal done. I think just the fact that they had to commit a year sooner than they would have liked to, because they didn't have the fifth-year option of a first-round pick, I thought that's what made this whole thing difficult. And that's why we're at this point now where you've got the team, maybe to your point, publicly trying to make sure that people know, like, hey, we're invested into them. Beside the contract, we realize we made a mistake. I got to be honest with you. I don't know if it's if the team just trying to, you know, put this out there publicly to, you know, make it look more like they're supportive of him, or they should have been, and, you know, they're trying to own up to their mistake. However you want to look at it, it's refreshing to me, because you very rarely hear a front office executive admit to a mistake. And so that is kind of refreshing for me to read that comment and be like, okay, there's some people who can look at themselves in the mirror and say, yeah, we should have committed to him a long time ago. It probably would have been a little bit cheaper and better for all parties involved.
But you would have to also assume that they're willing to make that that response. They're willing to answer that question, because a lot of times we all know front office decision makers are very close to the vest on things that they do, decisions that they make, the reasons why they make those decisions. And generally speaking, it isn't to massage the ego or the, you know, the psyche of the player. It just isn't. It's just business is business, and there's no real emotions attached to doing the business that has to take place. It seems as though Dallas, and just from a lot of the people that, you know, have played for Dallas that I know personally, there is this very unique way of approaching business and personal relationships as it applies to being a Dallas Cowboy, as it applies to Jerry Jones and now Stephen
Jones. It's your privilege to be a Dallas Cowboy. It's an honor to be a Dallas Cowboy. I'm just telling you, that's how it feels, man.
We weren't being negative enough, so you needed to.
I'm just saying, like, that's how it feels. What do you want from me? You know, you gotta, you know, like, well, if it's spicy, add a couple habaneros in there. You know, why not? Let's turn this into something here.
This dude.
All right, Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, Jonas Knox is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. Coming up next, though, it could have been the end of an era in the world of sports last night. Coming up next here, it's Outkick the Coverage, Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up in, we'll call it a little over 10 minutes from now on Fox Sports Radio, we are going to get back into sort of an up and down roller coaster for a couple of fan bases in the world of sports over the last 24 hours or so. So we'll have that for you here on Fox Sports Radio. Now, although Brady Quinn, I know that Pat Connaughton is a world champion, and he is your Notre Dame brethren.
That's right, baby.
Monty Williams, also a Notre Dame alum. You know, not so good for him. I mean, it felt like it was. I mean, look, they were up 2-0, and everyone just it seemed like Phoenix was the better team, and they were rolling, and you know, like everything was going their way, and they were getting a an unhealthy Giannis as they were heading into the finals, and then they go up 2-0, and then here we are, man. They never won another game. What a bummer. Feel bad for Suns and Four guy.
Jeez.
It's terrible.
You really?
Yeah. Not really.
Do you actually feel bad for
Suns really
and
all.
Four guy?
No, not really at all. Yeah, I think they milked it. Their fan base was pretty obnoxious. All the way through. But the conversation does turn to Chris Paul, because it was, everybody had just broken out their support for Chris Paul, a guy who has routinely been known as a pain in the ass as a teammate, according to many people on the Clippers from back in the day.
And you had already awarded him the MVP of the series.
I said the narrative was around Chris Paul. There was a lot of support there. Yeah. It's like the Russell Wilson. Remember Russell Wilson didn't get an MVP vote? That was the big talk last year. He's never even gotten an MVP vote before. And then he went out and had those, you know, first few games, and it just felt like, all right, here we go. The conversation is on. But Chris Paul spoke with the media afterwards and also was asked about potential future plans. Here was Chris Paul.
Ain't no moral victories or whatnot. We sort of saw what it takes to get there. And, you know, hopefully we see what it takes to get, you know, past that.
Knowing that for so long you worked to get to this point, is there any solace in, hey, I've had this experience and I can learn from it and I might get back here?
I mean, it'll take a while to process this or whatnot, but it's the same mentality. Get back to work. You know what I mean? I ain't retiring, if that's what you're asking. That's out. So, you know, back to work.
Chris Collinsworth was in an interview I saw him one time. He said that every day that goes by, he thinks about those Super Bowl losses. Mm-hmm. Like, he never lets them go. If Chris Paul never gets back to an NBA Finals, which at this point in his career,
it
has to, right?
Yes.
It has to.
You know, everybody talks about how exciting this time of the year is, and what's the first game we'll watch for the NFL? The Hall of Fame game.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
Yep. It haunts me every year. Every single year. You know, I was the highest rated guy coming out of high school. I'm the highest rated guy coming into the draft. and I didn't have the pro career that I would have liked to have had. And your ultimate goal, the ultimate resting, the final resting place, when you do this, you play this game and you try to play it at the highest level that you can, is to be in the conversation of being a Hall of Famer. Haunts me to this day, every day. Some years it's more intense than others, but there's not a year that doesn't go by where I'm like, dang, I didn't have a Hall of Fame NFL career. Like, it's crazy, you know? So, yeah, it's going to haunt them for certain.
The funny thing about that is, like, one, you're preaching to the choir here. I mean, obviously, that I feel not necessarily about the Hall of Fame game that way, but I think I'm motivated still now and will forever be because of what didn't go right in my professional career, or maybe even what didn't go right with what I envisioned in my college career. But, you know, the reality is this, because I think that's a tough mental space to be in, because even Tom Brady – who's the greatest of all time, still has these chips on his shoulder, a sixth-round pick, or the fact that he was beat twice by Eli Manning and the Giants. Like, those losses, as great as his wins are, even the greatest of all time in football, and arguably maybe one of the best professional athletes ever, he still has the motivation from losses, and he's won more than anyone else at the sport. So I always think about that. Just, it's human nature. I think most people who get to the professional sports level, whether they're a Hall of Famer or not, most of them are mentally wired and geared to be more motivated by their downfalls than by the success. Because success isn't going to make you get up at 4:30 or 5 a.m. the next morning to go bust your butt, to go work out or prepare yourself, or to get things back on track. A loss sure as hell will. Like, those are the moments where you feel that pit in your stomach. You can't sleep because you're so motivated by it. And so that's where I feel like it's human nature for us to be able to, and for Chris Paul in this case, he'll never forget it. Like, because you never really do forget the losses. You never really do forget the mistakes, the interceptions, or whatever the case is. And so that's where I feel like it's going to be hard for him to get past this. But hopefully there's motivation at some point, and they can get better, and they can make some adjustments, because that was the one thing that was – he didn't make adjustments, and Monty Williams and that team sure as hell didn't, because there was never an answer for Giannis the rest of that series.
You know, the question always is, was it better to never have made it at all or to have made it and came up short?
I used to think –
oh, you mean like the people on Twitter?
When the troller becomes the troller. Yeah. That was a good one, Brady.
Look, I used to think that if I got to a championship and lost, would it feel worse than had never gotten to one at all? And I just think at least you can know you had a chance. At least you had a crack at it. And to never get that moment, I would rather, you know, I'd rather at least get a taste.
I don't know, man.
Yeah. Ask the Bills. Like, how do they feel?
Yeah,
That I want to see the confetti come and never know what that feels like.
All right. So can we – does that mean we can't talk about the Hall of Fame game when it gets here, LeVar?
No, we definitely can.
Because let me walk you through this. Just gamble your ass
you're
off
walk
and you'll forget
it.
All about it. Gamble your ass off on that game and you'll forget all about it. That'll make everything feel better. All right, hour three next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.